And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, April 30th. We have a great show lined up for you today. Katie Bosler will be here to talk about the UAS commencement activities that will be happening very soon. We'll talk with members of the Jones Family Singers performing Friday night at the Jack. We'll learn about Sunday's Heavy Equipment Day. And we'll talk with Jen Rose about her first Friday show at Alaska Robotics. And as with every Thursday, Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more here on a Juno Afternoon. But first, National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A prominent First Nations lawyer and advocate is speaking out against the Canadian government's proposed new anti-terror legislation. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, she says the proposed law would make everyone a suspect.
Pam Palmiter is the chair of Indigenous Governance at Toronto's Ryerson University. She was among more than 50 witnesses to speak before a parliamentary committee about the legislation. Palmiter says the law isn't really about terrorism, it's about protecting the status quo.
This new national security law focuses on threats to sovereignty, territorial integrity, diplomatic relations of all things, economic stability, critical infrastructure. All of these things are an essential part of the daily lives of Canadians and First Nations. Passing this bill for any activity, any person, any purpose that threatens national security, so defined as financial stability and territorial integrity, makes us all suspects.
The new law would give intelligence agencies the ability to disrupt terror plots, make it easier to limit the movements of suspects, expand no-fly lists, and crack down on extremist propaganda. But some critics say the law could be applied to lawful advocacy, such as First Nations environmental activists protesting against resource development on their lands. Palmiter says she is routinely tracked by federal agencies, spied on because of her involvement in Aboriginal issues. Other Aboriginal leaders say the new law is about increasing the output of the oil sands and protecting the oil pipeline agenda. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The current leadership of the Lower Brule Sioux Tribe continues to face opposition. There's disagreement between some tribal council members and tribal employees. Now the arrival of a former South Dakota U.S. attorney on the reservation is raising concerns with the acting tribal chairman. As Jim Kent reports, the acting leader is questioning why the former U.S. attorney is getting involved in the tribe's issues.
When Kevin Wright stepped up from the position of Lower Brule Sioux vice chairman to chairman after Mike Jandrew's death, Wright's goal was to lead an administration that was free of cronyism and corruption. Kevin Wright says he's attempting to move the Lower Brule Sioux tribe forward while under the shadow of a federal investigation, but he isn't being given access to the tribe's financial records. Amid these difficulties, and after dismissing three attorneys who worked for the tribe under Jandrew, Kevin Wright was puzzled after receiving a phone call from the former U.S. attorney. Wright says he agreed to a meeting on the advice of the tribe's new attorney, but was surprised by the conversation with Brendan Johnson.
Then he proceeded to say that, you know, they're going to take you to court.
Who was he referring to?
Not sure. He wasn't really specifying who. He just said they. And I'm assuming that they are the other side, meaning the other counsel and the ex-tribal attorney.
Wright asked that Johnson offer to consult the former tribal attorneys to see what it would take for them and the opposing tribal council members to recognize Kevin Wright as tribal chairman. Kevin Wright says he's puzzled why the former South Dakota U.S. attorney would be working with individuals who may be implicated in a federal investigation. Brendan Johnson asserts he was asked by tribal members on both sides of the issue to see if he could help. He adds that he isn't working for anyone and was invited by Kevin Wright to the Lower Brule Sioux Reservation. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
A mascot bill failed to pass a Colorado Senate committee. The Associated Press reports the bill to direct schools to get permission from tribes to use Indian mascots was rejected Wednesday. Opponents say it would be too costly for schools to change, while supporters say Indian mascots are harmful to Native children. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout, and here in the studio, some of my favorite people, love my job every week. We've got Katie Bosler from UAS, as well as a graduating senior at UAS, Andrew Ainsworth. Welcome to the studio.
Good afternoon.
Thanks, Shona.
Nice to be here.
Well, so we've got some pretty big stuff coming up here on the campus.
Yes. It is commencement weekend at the University of Alaska Southeast. So, you know, it happens once a year, but it's always a huge event. And so what we have going is Sunday, May 3rd, 2 o'clock, is our 44th annual commencement ceremony here in Juneau. And then John Pugh, our chancellor, will be traveling starting tomorrow to Sitka for a ceremony there Friday night and then Saturday afternoon in Ketchikan. So it's a big weekend for him. And his last big commencement weekend as he is retiring at the end of May.
That's right. So the last opportunity to hear him speak on behalf of the University of Alaska Southeast, in which he has served quite a while.
Yes. And one of the things he's really excited about highlighting are some of our outstanding graduates and a lot of our programs and workforce development, but also arts and sciences, school of management, career education, school of education, master's programs. We have a lot of really great stuff going on.
And yeah. We talked to one of the outstanding graduate students last a week. Was it last week? Maybe a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, Heather Berg.
Yeah.
Yes. She's getting her Alaska Native Studies and Languages emphasis, Bachelor of Liberal Arts Interdisciplinary, and that is an increasingly popular degree at UAS. It's pretty exciting because what you can do is really take kind of what interests you or what you want your emphasis area to be and really craft your own education. And it's becoming more and more popular with the students.
Yeah. So speaking of outstanding graduates, we have one here being recognized.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Katie, you want to give Andrew a little what's it being? I hate to talk about you in the room, but I am, apparently.
Well, Andrew Ainsworth is here's what happens. Each program in our four schools chooses one outstanding graduate. And in arts and sciences, our outstanding graduate for social science is Andrew Ainsworth. And Andrew is a 2008 graduate. Right. He's actually about JDHS, right? Woohoo! JDHS may be doing something right.
Yeah.
And UAS, of course. But uas.alaska.edu/celebrate-grads. There it is.
Nice.
So Andrew's one of the people you can meet there, but you can also meet him right here on the air.
That's right. So, Andrew, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So, you know, graduating from JDHS and kind of transitioning to University of Alaska Southeast, what was that like for you?
Well, honestly, I took a couple of years off, and I was kind of drifting around, was not necessarily interested in education. But after enrolling in UAS after a couple of semesters, and especially after getting into the social science program, I don't know. I think it just really helped me turn my life around. It's something that's come to occupy a lot of my time thinking, something I spend a lot of time thinking about. And, I think it's just created a lot of opportunities for me that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
In social sciences, what has been your focus?
Well, that's one thing about the social science program at UAS that I really appreciate. It's more interdisciplinary than a lot of other bigger schools, so you have primary concentration and two secondaries, so I've been fortunate enough to study sociology as well as history and anthropology. And I think that's really afforded me sort of this more holistic understanding of social sciences, humanity.
as far as what comes next for you? So you've got this graduation. I'm sure everybody is like, Andrew, what are you going to do next?
I know. A few people have asked me that. Well, I'd like to travel a little bit this next year, but hopefully next fall I'd like to enroll in a master's social work program. Not really sure where yet. Thought I'd take a year off before getting into that, but that's something I'd like to pursue. And I've had professors encourage me and say that's definitely something I should look into. And yeah, interested in social work. That's kind of what I do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you see yourself definitely kind of giving back to a community. Yeah. I cross our fingers that it's mine or that it's ours, but so that's something you see yourself doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess when people ask that question and that's my response, the next question is, you know, why social work? It's not necessarily a very glamorous profession, but it's something that I'm passionate about, and I think there's opportunities there.
For other students at JDHS and Thunder Mountain High School who might think to themselves, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about UAS. I want to maybe get out of town, and I don't want to be so close to my parents or whatever the situation is. Is there anything that you could tell them that might say, hey, UAS is a pretty great option for you?
Well, yeah, I definitely was one of those kids. I wanted to get far away from here. but I don't think you really realize the potential at UAS until you really check it out. I would highly recommend it. It's a great school, small class sizes, really allow you to develop relationships with your professors. And it's home. This is Juneau. And I think as people, maybe in high school, kids are like to talk down about Juneau, but it's just a matter of time until a lot of people realize that this is a really wonderful place and there's wonderful people here.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of one of those hindsight 2020 things.
Right.
Yeah.
And has also been able to work while going to school, which I think has helped with the college cost.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's been something, the flexible class schedules there. I've been able to take some classes at night during the morning. And my employer, I also got to give it up to them. They've been really flexible. But, if you're working now, and education is something you're interested in, you don't have to choose one or the other. You can definitely do both here.
Yeah, and it's really important kind of as people look at universities all across the country. It's not something you can do everywhere, really.
Right.
Yeah. What would you say has been the highlight of your UAS career?
I don't know, just working with a lot of the social sciences professors, Laura Vest, sociology, David Noon, Robin Walls, Erica Hill, anthropology. They're all like super great people and really inspiring. Outside of that, I've been a volunteer here at KXLL for a few years. And then this semester, working with Rosemarie Alexander, she's also a professor, I was able to intern here and try my hand at a few other areas of broadcast, journalism, and
did a couple radio spots for me.
That's right.
When I was in a pinch for Sound in Motion this season.
Well,
it was awesome.
I was in a pinch for things to do.
Works out pretty nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I'm interested in anyway, but UAS really provided the framework and the structure so that I could earn university credits to do something that I was already interested in.
But it's also got a podcast going, which definitely we want to tell people about.
Yeah, part of the internship here was to agree to start up and organize a UAS media club, and we had pretty good interest this semester. It's something that I hope will continue next year, and if I'm around, I'd definitely be willing to volunteer my time to do that. But rather than coming down to the station, because we're out in Ock Bay, we've been making a series of little podcasts with music and kind of campus news. You can check that out on SoundCloud, UAS Media Club SoundCloud page.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was just listening to it today, and a really interesting story about, you know, we're going smoke-free, our campus, all the UAS campuses, July 1st, a little kind of story about that, and then a student-chosen music mix.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Andrew, again, congratulations on your upcoming graduation. That's a really big deal.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Outstanding graduate and doing some really cool stuff at the K3 stations. Best of luck to you in the future.
Thanks, Shona.
Yeah. So, Ms. Katie, could you give us the commencement information one more time? So,
sure.
People who want to hear John Pugh and see Andrew and other outstanding graduates.
Yeah, just a couple highlights. Actually, you know, speaking of another outstanding graduate is Andre Bunton in mathematics. Hicks. He's a JDHS 2011 grad. He is giving the commencement speech. And folks, if you want to see commencement speech, I think this is going to be a year to come out and hear it.
Yes, he's a fabulous performer.
Yes.
He's also singing the national anthem.
Yes, he's also singing the national anthem. You know, we multitask in this town, right? Yeah. And then we have, of course, Christina Pollack, founder of Alaskapella, who is going to be doing the Alaska flag song, state song. And Andrew is, you know, our mathematics outstanding graduate as well. So quite a dynamic individual, so that's really good. Also, our speaker, commencement speaker, will be the CEO of Alaska Airlines, Brad Tilden.
Wow.
And then Bill Corbis is receiving an honorary doctorate of laws. And Bill Corbis, of course, amazing guy, you know, ran AEL&P for years and years in many capacities. This has been a real stalwart, great citizen of Alaska and our community. And, of course, you know, great philanthropist who just gave away $40 million of his shares to the Alaska Community Foundation. So we're looking forward to honoring him on Sunday as well.
That's great. What time do people need to be there and where?
Well, it's the Rec Center, which is our joint use facility with the National Guard. So that's if you go out the back loop road, just past D. Harch around the roundabout, and go up the hill, take your first left. And there's actually not a lot of parking there. What you want to do is take a right, and you want to park in the UAS lot and take a bus over there. Or if it's a nice day, you can walk. And so I'd say get there around 1:30, and the ceremony starts at 2 o'clock.
That's great. It sounds like a really fabulous weekend, filled with lots of UAS activities, and it's going to be a really nice time to honor some outstanding students as well as our outgoing chancellor.
That's right. And in their caps and gowns, and then of course it's always fun to see the chancellor and the other faculty and administration in their, I call it sort of, you know, Henry VIII regalia. It's pretty funny.
yes. Andrew Ainsworth and Katie Butler, thank you so much for coming here to talk to us about all the upcoming commencement speeches and exercise this Sunday.
Oh,
Wow, that's the Jones Family Band. And they're opening up the Juno Jazz and Classics series coming this Friday. And I'm so lucky in the studio with me. I have Bishop Jones and Kenny from the Jones Family Singers. Hi, guys. Thanks for joining us in the studio.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Hello. How yeah. you
doing
today?
Great. Doing very well. And so I've gotten a chance to check out your music. And wow, you're going to, I think, blow the roof off of this place.
That's what we intend to.
So, of the Jones Family Singers, when did you all start out?
Well, we've been at it for quite some time. In fact, the group started out without the younger set that's in the group now, and we were the sensational Zion Airs. But then we ended up having to change our name, and we incorporated the younger ones in. And we became the Jones Family Singers, but it's been quite some time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I was 12 when we recorded our first album.
You were 12 when you recorded the first album?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm 45 now.
Well, I wasn't going to ask, but I can tell by your voice. I think the listening audience might be able to tell that you're definitely not 12. So can you talk a little bit about the members of the band? Because as I looked at the website and looked at, you know, who you all are, you're all a family. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's my dad, mm-hmm. which is Bishop Jones. You know, myself, I'm the bass player. And then it's my brother, Fred Jr., guitar player, keyboard player, music director. Then the singers are my sisters, Alexis, Teresa, Sabrina, Mice. Her name is Vilma, but we call her Mice.
She's the soprano, I'm imagining.
No, that's no. Sabrina.
Oh, okay. That's great. So how did the family band start? Was it one of those things where you're like, well, I sing a lot and I'm going to get my kids going here?
Well, having sung with other bands, I thought it would be easier if I incorporated it family. The harmony is better. You're most time together anyway. And so I said if I could ever get the family together and start training them up, I would have something worthwhile that would be lasting. And that's how the family got together and became the Jones Family.
And what kind of music do you usually do? Because I saw a lot of gospel. Is it mostly gospel? Is it everything that you kind of, you know, want to put your hands on, really?
Well, yes. We do gospel, mm-hmm. you know, and growing up, that's all we had was gospel, and that's what we love, gospel. You know, we don't take away anything from any of the other artists or anything like that, you know, but, you know, our gospel is the type of gospel that makes you move. It inspires you, you know, to do better or to want to do better. And everywhere we've been, you know, doing concerts and everything like that, someone always come up and say, we really appreciate this. We didn't expect gospel to be like this here in a club, you know. So it's real good.
Yeah. Well, it's a different sound, too. I think people sometimes maybe put gospel music in a category or, you know, that it can only sound a certain way. But listening to your music and the sound that you all produce, like you said, it kind of crosses every boundary there.
Yeah.
And also, it's traditional gospel music with a contemporary flair. We learn to grow where we plant it. And if we're in a venue that's non, quote-unquote, church, we still know how to bring what we bring and keep it in the proper respect.
Bishop Jones, I noticed that y'all are from Texas. I am too.
All right.
And,
okay.
Yeah.
Report.
I'm from Dallas, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and I was just wondering, how did your, you know, did you grow up in a musical family yourself? And
no, I did not. I was given an album at the time of the Mighty Clouds of Joy, And that was the first time I ever heard of the Clouds in my when I was about 12 or 13. And I was hooked then on gospel music. And so as a result of having that album, I learned every song. I learned to mimic everybody in the album. And from then on, I said, if I ever grew up, married, and have kids, this is what we're going to do. And that's what we did. And besides, we were in your town just about 3 weeks ago with our brand new documentary at the International Festival.
Well, that's a great segue. That was going to be my next question. Pretty cool stuff. Y'all having some filmmakers decided to follow you all around for a while.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that process and where people might be able to see it?
Well, they followed us around for about 3 years.
You know. So you became pretty good friends with these people, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, to the point we stayed in their home. They have a fabulous home. They followed us to jobs, shooting range, to work, to the mall, and to every concert. And they got all the footage, pictures that they could get their hands on. And we opened our lives up to the whole world to see what it like to go from meager fare to mega fare.
That's incredible. What was that experience like for you, Kenny, just being kind of, when you watched the documentary, what was going through your brain?
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, it was my kids and my wife, and they all were there with me, you know, when I finally saw it. And, you know, then to see it for the first time with my dad, my mom, my sisters, my brother, you know, it was wonderful. And some good friends, you know, came also. They made the trip to Austin, and it was just overwhelming. There was a lot of wet eyes. And my eyes wasn't wet, but
yeah, they were.
The truth is out now. If people in Juneau wanted to see that documentary, is there an opportunity? Is it for sale? Is it on Amazon? Or how do people see that, do you know?
It is not for sale quite yet because it's still following the film festival circuit.
Got it.
Different film festival circuits are asking for it. But we're hoping that it will come to that point because we hear this all the time. By calls, email, inboxes, when can we get the documentary? As soon as we can get it to you.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's amazing. It's kind of making the circuit. I'm sure it's going to do pretty well all over the country.
Okay.
What's your touring schedule like? And what's your practice schedule like? And how does that work?
Well, our touring schedule is growing. We recently did Bangor, Maine, American Folk Festival, the Lincoln Center, New York, the Kennedy Center in D.C. We were up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, doing
Roots Green.
Yeah, festival. And we're getting ready to go to Europe. We're going to be in Amsterdam. We're going to be in the Netherlands. We're going to Germany. We're going 14-day tour to Russia. We're going to be doing a thing in Virginia with Patti LaBelle. We're going to be in Brooklyn, New York. The list goes on. And
the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
The Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah. We're also going to do Playboy Jazz.
Gospel music.
Gospel
all the way.
The Playboy, I love it. So you have plenty of time to practice, obviously, because you're touring all the time.
Yeah, we practice and play.
Yeah. Bishop Jones, when you first started, you know, this kind of dream of having your family, and now your family is touring all over the world, did you ever think it would be like this?
Yes, I did. Because that was my dream. That was my hope, that God would take what we give to him and make it mega. So I had no doubt that we would come to this. I just didn't know how soon it would be. But, oh, yes, it's been in my heart and mind for years.
When I look at your website and just your family members and everybody playing, it looks like you have some young up-and-comers, too. A drummer, I noticed, is what, your grandson? Is
grandson,
that true?
Yes.
Your son. Okay, yeah. Great. Is he on tour with you? Or
no.
He's in school,
he's in
I read.
School.
Yeah, great. So yeah. When he gets the opportunity, I guess he can come out sometimes.
Yes, but a lot of times, you know, all of us have kids. The kids come as well, you know. But they're in school now, so, you know, they can't come. But sometimes we was in Lafayette, Louisiana, doing a festival there this past weekend, and everybody was on stage together.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, that's great.
You know, the kids, they come up and they'll dance. And sometimes we have a part where we have a little rap going on, and my son came up and rapped with me. And we just did a live recording in Markham at the church, and it's going to be outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also noticed that a lot of your family members give back musically as well to the churches that you all attend as well.
Right. They play various instruments at our local church. Some of them play at churches in the community. And wherever there's an opportunity to lend a helping hand, our way of giving back, we do that.
It's your first trip to Alaska?
Very first, and I love it. I want to go mountain climbing, bear hunting, fishing. I want to do whatever he says we can do.
How long are you in town for?
We'll leave Saturday. We play tomorrow, and then we go back to Texas Saturday.
Well, we're very lucky to have you here and very happy to have your family here.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
You kick off the Juneau Jazz and Classics, one of the biggest festivals that our community puts on, and with the biggest acts. It's pretty amazing. So that's Friday. That's tomorrow night, May 1st, 7:30 p.m., Centennial Hall. Check out these guys, the Jones Family Singers, and they're just an amazing, amazing group. They'll definitely provide some inspiration for your new month of May.
And may I say, I would love for everybody to come up and meet us, come up, talk to us, shake hands. We want to meet you. And I can promise you, if you come to the festival, it will not be something you will regret. You'll leave with a happy heart.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Have a great show tomorrow.
All right.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 30th of April, 2015. It was on this date, 1859, Charles Dickens's A Tale of Two Cities was first published. It came out in serial form in a new weekly magazine all the year round, which Dickens himself had founded. And A Tale of Two Cities was on the front page of the first issue. Thanks to his popularity, the first issue sold 125,000 copies. The magazine was successful from the start. Dickens's investment paid off, and he serialized Great Expectations in the magazine 1 year later. A Tale of Two Cities, which begins, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness, it was the epoch of belief, it was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. We had everything before us, we had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven, we were all going direct the other way." It's the birthday of Annie Dillard, born in Pittsburgh, 1945. She wrote her master's thesis on Thoreau's Walden. Then she moved to a cabin in the Blue Ridge Mountains and kept a daily journal of her observations of nature, her thoughts about religion, wrote in old notebooks and on 4x6-inch index cards. And her book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, published in 1974, won the Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction. She was only 29 years old. Her most recent work is a novel, The May Trees. On this day in 1803, the United States bought the French claim to Louisiana Territory for $15 million, which was borrowed from European banks at 6% interest. It's the birthday of Alice B. Toklas, born in 1877, Gertrude Stein's partner. It was Gertrude Stein who wrote the book entitled The Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, which was actually Stein's own autobiography. But Toklas did write the Alice B. Toklas cookbook, which included the famous recipe for hashish fudge. Here's a poem for today by Charles Wright, looking west from Laguna Beach at night. I've always liked the view from my mother-in-law's house at night. Oil rigs off Long Beach like floating lanterns out in the smog, dark Pacific, stars in the eucalyptus, lights of airplanes arriving from Asia, and town lights littered like broken glass around the bay and back up the hill. In summer, dance music is borne up on the sea winds from the hotel's beach deck far below, twist and shout, or begin the begin. It's nice to think that somewhere someone is having a good time, and pleasant to picture them down there, turned out tipsy and flushed in their white shorts and their turquoise shirts. Later, I like to sit and look up at the mythic history of Western civilization, pinpricked and clued through the zodiac. I'd like to be able to name them, say what's what, and how who got where, curry the physics of metamorphosis and its end game. But I've spent my life knowing nothing. Looking West from Laguna Beach at Night by Charles Wright, from Negative Blue, Selected Later Poems, published by Ferrer, Straus, and Giroux, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. Throughout the month of April, their favorite poem project, Florida, invites Floridians to submit their favorite poem. Florida-based listeners can submit their nominations at poetryfoundation.org/favoritepoemflorida. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And you're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, April 30th, and it's 38 minutes past the hour. In the studio with me, I have Neil Atkinson from the Mendenhall Flying Lions Club, as well as Sarah Griffith from the Juno Rotary Club, here to talk to us about Sunday's Heavy Equipment Day. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
So, Heavy Equipment Day. Neil, what is that?
It's a chance for families to bring, you know, come out and see all the different pieces of equipment that's around town. We're going to have excavators and loaders and bobcat skid steers and all kinds of pieces of equipment, fire trucks, dump trucks, so that kids can come out and get their curiosity taken care of to see, you know, what these trucks are like, what these pieces of equipment are like up close, and take some of the questions they have, you know, and so the kids don't go off on their own and see a piece of equipment there and go up and look at it without being supervised, so they can come and see it safely and see it operate, even have a chance to operate some of the little pieces of equipment with an operator.
Wow, I think the Brotherhood Bridge, you know, happening, there's some heavy equipment around us all the time that I'm always like, wow, that's so cool. So is that kind of how the event started, Sarah? Was like, how did it all come together?
Well, the Flying Lions Club and the Juno Rotary both wanted to do a heavy equipment day in May, and we found out about this. So we decided to collaborate together to do one big event. So we've partnered together with the two clubs and with the International Operators Union, Local 302. They're providing all of the operating volunteers. Grants Plaza is providing the space, and then just about every equipment vendor in Juno is donating something for it.
That's amazing. And what's Grants Plaza, for those people who don't know? Can you fill them in on where that is?
Western Auto Marine parking lot.
Lemon Creek,
yeah.
Yeah, so pretty much go to the Western Auto. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Jerry's Meats are your reference points, yeah.
Right.
Great. And Neil, what will you be doing at this event?
just kind of walking around, making sure everybody's safe, making sure the people are moving, just in, you know, crowd control, you know, hopefully crowd control, you know, just making sure that everybody's safe and looking at everything and being able, you know, help out wherever we need to help, answer questions, get some information out about Rotary and Lions clubs, and then go from there.
And will the union, you said, be on hand to, because, you know, I imagine that it does take operators to work these pieces of heavy equipment. So it's also kind of job, you know, people learning about jobs, I imagine.
Yeah, a lot of different vocations to get excited about.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Could you give us the time one more time, please?
Yes, May 3rd on Sunday from 10 to 3.
10 to 3. And it's a free event, open to the public?
It's actually plenty of free static equipment for viewing, but you actually have the opportunity to take rides on moving equipment, and it's $5 for 3 tickets on 3 different rides of moving equipment.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
And there will be food available from, there's one church group that is providing hot dogs, and I think there's going to be another food vendor there at least, so.
Some donuts.
Donuts and things. Yeah. So it's a free event. It's a community service from the two clubs, and then, like I said, Sarah said, there's, you know, tickets for rides if you want to go a little bit farther and actually be on a ride. But the kids will be able to climb around on other pieces of static equipment without, you know, any charge. So,
you know, it's perfect because there's so many times, like I said, where I walk around going, what is that? Or a kid goes, hey, what is that? And I'm like, I have no idea. And now is an opportunity for people to come actually learn what's going on in our community with these huge pieces of very cool equipment.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Neil and Sarah, thank you so much for providing this to our community and for talking about Sunday's Heavy Equipment Day. That's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Grants Plaza. That is the parking lot there by Western Auto. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's the Curtis Salgado Band. You can check them out at the Blues Cruises for the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. That's going to be pretty, always a good time out there on the Blues Cruise. And joining me in the studio right now, we have Aaron Suring from Alaska Robotics and artist Jen Rose here to talk about the First Friday Show at Alaska Robotics. Welcome to the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you. So, Jen, welcome to town.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So where do you hail from?
I live in Dallas, Texas. So I grew up in Texas. So this is a great getaway for me.
Yeah. Excellent. And could you talk a little bit about the work you do, the sculptures that you do?
Well, what's on exhibit right now at Alaskan Robotics is over the course of the past year, I've made 1,000 porcelain octopus tentacles. And they all go on the wall like pushpins. And so 700 of them were exhibited in a gallery space at Brookhaven College in Dallas. And then 300 are going to be here at Alaskan Robotics.
And what was the impetus kind of behind the tentacles?
Well, I really like repetitive things, obviously. And so I wanted to do something that has a lot to do with meditation and just doing something over and over and over as a calming of the mind. And I kind of see the tentacles as the subconscious coming to the surface. So the more I do it, the more my mind kind of flows.
And was the tentacle something that kind of just your mind said, it flows to tentacles, or how did that come about?
I think I did like a piece kind of as a joke where I had some tentacles that were coming out of the wall and I really liked the way they looked. So I said, I'm going to make 1,000.
And you say they go into the wall like pushpins. How big are these tentacles?
They're anywhere from 3 to 8 inches. And so they're not huge, but
baby octopus. Size.
Yeah, they're okay. Little. They're little octopus.
And a lot of your work have to do with kind of repetition and that kind of thing?
It does. And I've done two-dimensional work and then three-dimensional work, and I really enjoy doing multiples of things or working with patterns that replicate.
And like you said, that's kind of for the mindfulness of it or the ability to kind of let go and zen out on it.
Yeah, definitely. And, I've tended to do that kind of work more for the past 3 to 5 years, I guess. So it's been a fun journey.
And so, Aaron, you run Alaska Robotics with some great folks downtown. And I was just wondering if you could talk to us, for those people who don't know in the listening viewership, listeningership, what Alaska Robotics is.
We're a gallery downtown. So, yeah, we'd like to do a lot more like comic art stuff. So that's more our focus. But this is a nice little tie-in, and it's nice to have something a little bit fresh and different, and I was really excited to get that up here, and Jen's work is just so striking when there's hundreds of tentacles sticking out of the wall. It's really, really pretty great.
It kind of grabs you.
Yeah, a little bit.
How did you meet Jen? How did Alaska Robotics team meet up with Jen?
She is a friend of Mitch Watley's from way back in the day, because he's from Texas as well, so she came up to visit and then kind of got hooked in and wanted to do more.
That's great.
So, yeah, we're bringing her back.
Nice. And it's first Friday. Will it be up for a month, or how will the exhibit work?
We open tomorrow. Tomorrow's the first already. It's kind of crazy. And then we're going to have her work up for about 2 weeks, and then we're kind of going to turn it over to cruise ship season a little bit. So we'll have more stuff up on the wall, more variety of things.
And so, Jen, how does that work? Do you sell tentacles, or they're kind of like a tentacle package, or how does that?
Well, each tentacle is for sale, and they are $55 a tentacle, so you can buy as many tentacles as you would like to create your own installation at your house.
Yeah, pick the tentacle that moves you the most.
Right.
And are they each kind of created differently? So it's not like a mold, right?
No, okay. Each one is hand done, and it's porcelain clay, so they're all pure white, and they have little pink glazed suckers on the bottom. And so each one is definitely individual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's next on your horizon gallery-wise after this opening tomorrow?
Well, I'm working on a couple of commission pieces. So I'm back to my studio in Dallas doing that. So that's a fun project.
Yeah. And Aaron, what's up next for Alaska Robotics? What does a cruise ship season gallery openings look like?
Well, before we get that far, our third anniversary is coming up next week. And
get
so
out of
May
town.
May the 4th will be fun events. I'm not entirely sure all we got planned, but we're going to do some sales and stuff, and it'll be great. Yeah, you should come check that out. And then, I just kind of, once we get to summer season, we put up a lot more different variety of stuff on the wall. So, like, all the shows we've had over the past year, I will have examples of some of that stuff out, and just more variety of what we've done.
So you have a retrospective for your 3 years.
Yeah, that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. Oh, 3 years already. Where
right?
does the time go?
I don't know.
That's awesome. Well, cool. So tomorrow, can you give us the time one more time then where people can find you?
So, Alaska Robotics Gallery is 220 Front Street, just next to the theater downtown there. And we will be open and gallerying from at least 4 to 7 until people stop showing up. So it could go as late as 8 or 9, but come by 7, be safe.
Okay. And Jen, you'll be there to talk to people about your work?
Absolutely, yes. I'm happy to.
And is there a website that people can go to check out just kind of what you do?
Sure. Yeah, you can go to jenroseart.com, and it's JenroseArt.com.
Great. And for Alaska Robotics, something that online that people can check out?
Sure. Yeah, AlaskaRobotics.com. Come find us.
Easy enough. Thanks so much for coming in. It's Jen Rose and Aaron Suring here talking about the Alaska Robotics First Friday opening. That's tomorrow from 4 to 7. You can check them out downtown and see a bunch of tentacles. I'm excited about that.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Shauna.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shauna Osterhout. Today is Thursday, April 30th, and we're 52 minutes past the hour. That was Wind Sync. They're part of the Juno Jazz and Classics whole festival, which kicks off tomorrow night with the fabulous Jones Family Singers, who we talked to a little bit earlier in the show. And now here with me, the one, the only...
We need another name, Shauna.
Do we? It's so fun for me. Mrs. Nancy the Attorney.
Okay, then.
Well, I know. It's so fun for me.
My mother-in-law around here. Okay. Well, as you mentioned, Jazz and Classics, we got us some big openings right now. Jazz and Classics on Friday is kicking it off, and we have Seven Homeless Mammoths Wander New England all kicking off. So things going on through May 16th and through May 24th. And as we always said, don't let that get in your way of getting right there. Okay. It's First Friday, too, just to add insult to injury.
Yes, of course.
We have, at Arts Council, we have a wonderful show. It was, we had to do a quick replacement. One of our artists was unable to finish, and we, Paul Volkers and Mary Pat Wyatt and Swallow's Journey Abby Foch have stepped in, and they have a delightful show. It's called Architectural Travelogue, and then, Abby's got some of her jewelry just beautifully displayed. It's just an amazing little show over there. So we hope that you'll start your First Friday wanderings by stopping in at the Jack and getting your little pamphlet and checking that out, and then come back to the Jack, because at 7 o'clock, the Juno Ballroom Dance Community is going to start having ballroom dances every First Friday. Woohoo!
I had no idea.
Well, these things just pop up, you know, like a pop-up ballroom dance.
Which happens totally all the time.
All the time. I really want to, yes. But they'll have Thunder Mountain Big Band, and it's just going to be a really wonderful day. So, okay, so you go there. We're going to do alphabetical order, just because that's how it is. If people would just organize their stores downtown in this order, that would be great. Annie Kales has Candace Christie. The Alaska Brewing is going to have a series of fresh beers that you can try, and they have music. And, of course, that's only on First Friday. The rest of these, a lot of these places are up for the whole month. So if you get a little parched, you can stop in at the brewery and get going there. Alaska Robotics, you were just speaking with Jen Rose with her wonderful It sounds like a fascinating exhibit, actually. And Aunt Claudia's Dolls is going to be open. It'll open at noon, and it's also open on Saturdays, I think. So you, if you have to run out of time, you go back to them in another time. Caribou Crossings down on 387 South Franklin Street has their 18th summer season opening. Oh, my goodness, 18 years. They always have wonderful Alaskan artists, and this is your opportunity to get first dibs before all the visitors get here. Centennial Hall has the annual Capital City Quilters Guild show, which is delightful. It's free. It runs through the weekend. And you could get in a drawing and possibly win a quilt, so you need to go there. And plus, it's just beautiful. COPA has Hal Turman. This is her very first exhibit ever. She's a multimedia artist, I believe. Fairweather Prince is doing the same sort of thing as Caribou Crossing, having a pre-summer sale. Stop in, find out what they've got, get ready for the summer. GCI Downtown has Wisdom of the Grandmothers with Susan Stark. It's only for this particular day. Hearthside Books is having a book signing with Stuart Archer Cohen. This is How It Really Sounds. You'll be downtown, and then they'll have a signing out in the valley at another time. Juno Artist Gallery is featuring Cameron Burns. He's a photographer. And there's photography up at the Juno City Museum, Behind the Lens. All the sort of historic photographers that you've heard of, there'll be an exhibit of those. Then there's going to be a who's who, like old photographs. And if you recognize anybody, you get to tell them who it is. Like, yeah, that was my mom when she was doing whatever. And then there's a picture stitching composite. So three different photography exhibits there. Kindred Posts has hashtag Insta photo booth with Alfie and Katie Price. Music by Selma Houck and snacks by Happy Camper. K2's got photography. I don't think you're having an opening, but it's great photography here. There's a new place for a gallery or for Foos Friday, the Northern Tea House. It's out on 9310 Glacier Highway. Have you been there?
I haven't been yet, which
well,
I want to go so bad.
Me too. So they're featuring M.K. McNaughton. Rainforest Yoga has Tammy Davis doing a little yoga tidbit from 5:15 to 6:15. The Rookery has Nirvana and Brotherhood, photography by Anna Kramer. The Sequence Board Shop downtown is having a grand reopening with refreshments. And the Canvas has The Flume by Avril Veliz, which is a fascinating study of the flume under different lighting circumstances. Okay, then at 5 o'clock, Calico 2 Reloaded, a collection of original skits by Fresh Passion Theater. It's over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. At 5:30 downstairs in the 360 studio, everything you wanted to know about palliative care but were afraid to ask. Then, as I mentioned, this at 7 p.m., the May Day Ball, the Thunder Mountain Big Band is over there at the Jack. The Juno Dance Theater is celebrating its 40th anniversary celebration spring dance at Thunder Mountain High School. They'll be doing this through the weekend. This is Philip Crowder and Richie Adan's swan song, so to speak, and they will move to New York and then be famous or something.
Again.
Yes, again. I mean, they were famous because they were here, right? Yeah. And then we have at 7:30 the opening night for Seven Homeless, and the Jones family is over at Centennial Hall. And there's a comedy weekend out at Suite 907 with Ian Bagg and Jerry Evans. Now, if you live through Friday, then you can get to the Saturday. At noon, it's a DIPAC, is the Juno Appreciation Day, so go to DIPAC and check it out. You have a second opportunity to hear to see Calico 2 Reloaded. Full Circle Music is having their studio recitals at 3 p.m. on Saturday and on Sunday. The Revelers, there is a Louisiana Jukebox dance party over at the Jack on 7:30 on
And you know
Saturday.
What? I hate to interrupt.
But we're done.
But I have to. That's how amazing
that's
our
how
town
is. Yes.
Okay. You can check
so you
it out.
Go to our calendar and get this information because there's so much going on. Don't miss it.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3.